heart render in the crowd, the movement of his throat as he swallowed his dose. He would be the first.
41. Matthias. 2-1. Matthias saw Nina's pupils dilate. Her lips parted, and she pushed past him, stepping down from the tank. The air around her seemed to crackle, her skin glowing as if lit from within by something miraculous. As if she'd tapped a vein of gel directly, and now the god's power flowed through her. She went for the heart render immediately. Nina flicked her wrist, and his eyes exploded in his head. He crumpled without a sound. "Be free," she said. Nina glided toward the soldiers. Matthias moved to protect her as he saw rifles raised. She shifted her hands. "Stop," she said. They froze. "Lay down your arms." As one, they obeyed her. "Sleep," she commanded. Nina swept her hands in an arc, and the soldiers toppled without protest, row after row, stalks of wheat felled by an invisible scythe. The air was eerily still. Slowly, Wylan and Inej climbed down from the tank. Jesper and the rest followed, and they stood in stunned silence, all language dissolved by what they'd witnessed. Gazing out at the field of fallen bodies, it had happened so quickly. There was no way to reach the harbor unless they walked over the soldiers. Without a word, they began to pick their way through, the hush broken only by the faraway bells of the elder clock. Matthias laid his hand on Nina's arm, and she released a little sigh, letting him lead her. Beyond the quay, the docks were deserted. As the others headed toward the Ferrolind, Matthias and Nina trailed behind. Matthias could see Rotti clinging to the mast, jaw slack with fear. Specht was waiting to unmoor the ship, and the look on his face was equally terrified.
"Matthias!"
He turned. A group of Druskela stood on the quay, their uniforms soaked, their black hoods raised. They wore masks of dully gleaming gray chainmail over their faces, their features obscured by the mesh. But Matthias recognized Jarl Brum's voice when he spoke.
"Traitor!"
Brum said from behind his mask.
"Betrayer of your country and your god! You will not leave this harbor alive. None of you will."
His men must have gotten him out of the treasury after the explosion. Had they followed Matthias and Nina to the river beneath the ash? Had there been horses or more tanks stationed in the upper town? Nina raised her hands.
"For Matthias, I will give you one chance to leave us be."
"You cannot control us, witch," said Brum. "Our hoods, our masks, every stitch of clothing we wear is reinforced with Grisha steel. Core cloth created to our specifications by Grisha fabricators under our control and designed for just this purpose. You cannot force us to your will. You cannot harm us. This game is at an end."
Nina lifted a hand. Nothing happened. And Matthias knew what Brum was saying was true.
"Go!" Matthias shouted at them. "Please! You..."
Brum lifted his gun and fired. The bullet struck Matthias directly in the chest. The pain was sudden and terrible. And then gone. Before his eyes, he saw the bullet emerge from his chest. It hit the ground with a plink. He pulled his shirt open. There was no wound. Nina was walking past him.
"No!"
he cried. The Druskela opened fire on her. He saw her flinch as the bullet struck her body, saw red blooms of blood appear on her chest, her breasts, her bare thighs. But she did not fall. As fast as the bullets tore through her body, she healed herself, and the shells fell harmlessly to the dock. The Druskela gaped at Nina. She laughed.
"You've grown too used to captive, Grisha. We're quite tame in our cages."
"There are other means," said Brum, pulling a long whip like the one Lars had used from his belt. "Your power cannot touch us, witch, and our cause is true."
"I can't touch you," said Nina, raising her hands. but I can reach them just fine.
Behind the Druskala, the Fjerdan soldiers Nina had put to sleep rose, their faces blank. One tore the whip from Brum's hand, the others snatched the hoods and masks from the startled Druskala's faces, rendering them vulnerable. Nina flexed her fingers, and the Druskala dropped their rifles, hands going to their heads, screaming in pain.
"For my country," she said. "For my people. For every child you put to the pyre. Reap what you've sown, Jarl Brum."
Matthias watched the Druskala twitch and convulse, blood trickling from their ears and eyes as the other Fjerdan soldiers looked on impassively. Their screams were a chorus. Klaas, who had drunk too much with him in Avfala. Geert, who'd trained his wolf to eat from his hand. They were monsters, he knew it, but boys as well, boys like him, taught to hate, to fear. "Nina," he said, hand still pressed over the smooth skin on his chest where a bullet wound should be. "Nina, please. You know they would not offer you mercy, Matthias."
I know, but let them live in shame instead."
She hesitated. "Nina, you taught me to be something better. They could be taught, too." Nina shifted her gaze to his. Her eyes were ferocious, the deep green of forests, the pupils dark wells. The air around her seemed to shimmer with power, as if she was alight with some secret flame. "They fear you as I once feared you," he said, "as you once feared me. We are all someone's monster, Nina."
For a long moment, she studied his face. At last, she dropped her arms, and the ranks of Druskala crumpled to the ground, whimpering.
She released the other soldiers, and they fell back into their slumber, puppets with their strings cut. Then her hand shot out once more, and Brum shrieked. He clapped his hands to his head, blood trickling between his fingers.
"He'll live?" Matthias asked.
"Yes," she said as she stepped onto the schooner. "He'll just be very bald."
Specht shouted commands, and the Ferrolined drifted into the harbor, picking up speed as the sails swelled with wind. No one ran to the docks to stop them, no ships or cannon fired. There was no one to give warning, no one to signal to the gunnery above. The elder clock chimed on unheeded as the schooner vanished into the vast black shelter of the sea, leaving only suffering in her wake.
42. In Ege. They'd been blessed with a strong wind. Inej felt it ripple through her hair, and couldn't help but think of the storm to come. As soon as they were on deck, Matthias had turned to Kuwei.
"How long does she have?"
Kuwei had some courage, but Nina had to translate in places. She did it distractedly, her glittering eyes roving over everyone and everything.
"The high will last 1 hour, maybe two. It depends how long it takes her body to process a dose of that size."
"Why can't you just purge it from your body like the bullets?" Matthias asked Nina desperately.
"It doesn't work," said Kuwei. "Even if she could overcome the craving for long enough to start purging it from her body, she'll lose the ability to pull the param from her system before it's all gone. You'd need another corporalnik using param to accomplish it."
"What'll it do to her?" asked Wylan.
"You've seen for yourself," Matthias replied bitterly. "We know what's going to happen."
Kaz crossed his arms.
"How will it start?"
"Body aches, chills. No worse than a mild illness," Kuwei explained. "Then a kind of hypersensitivity, followed by the tremors and the craving."
"Do you have more of the perum?"
Matthias asked.
"Yes. Enough to get her back to Kerudam."
"I won't take more," Nina protested.
"I have enough to keep you comfortable," Kuwei said. "But if you take a second dose, there is no hope at all."
He looked to Matthias.
This is her one chance. It's possible her body will purge enough of it naturally that addiction won't set in.
And if it does?
Kuei held out his hands, part shrug, part apology.
Without a ready supply of the drug, she'll go mad. With it, her body will simply wear itself out. Do you know the word param? It's the name my father gave to the drug. It means without pity.
When Nina finished translating, there was a long pause. I don't want to hear any more, she said. None of it will change what's coming. She drifted away toward the prow. Matthias watched her go.
The water hears and understands,
he murmured beneath his breath. Inej sought out Roddy and got him to dig up the wool coat she and Nina had left behind in favor of their cold weather gear when they'd landed on the northern shore. She found Nina near the prow, gazing out at the sea.
1 hour. Maybe two,
Nina said without turning. Inej halted in shock.
You heard me approach?
No one heard the wraith, especially over the sound of the wind and sea.
Don't worry. It wasn't those silent feet that gave you away. I can hear your pulse. Your breathing.
And you knew it was me?
Every heart sounds different. I never realized that before.
Inej joined her at the rail and handed over Nina's coat. The Grisha put it on, though the cold didn't seem to be bothering her. Above them, the stars shone bright between silver-seated drifts of cloud. Inej was ready for dawn, ready for this long night to be over, and the journey, too. She was surprised to find she was eager to see Ketterdam again. She wanted an omelette, a mug of too-sweet coffee. She wanted to hear the rain on the rooftops and sit snug and warm in her tiny room at the slat. There were adventures to come, but they could wait until she'd had a hot bath, maybe a few of them. Nina buried her face in her coat's woolen collar and said,
I wish you could see what I do. I can hear everybody on this ship, the blood rushing through their veins. I can hear the change in Kaz's breathing when he looks at you.
You can?
It catches, every time, like he's never seen you before.
And what about Matthias? Inej asked, eager to change the subject. Nina raised a brow, unfooled.
Matthias is afraid for me, but his heart thumps a steady rhythm no matter what he's feeling. So Fjärden. So orderly.
I didn't think you'd let those men live back at the harbor.
I'm not sure it was the right thing to do.
I'll become one more Grisha horror story for them to tell their children.
Behave, or Nina Zenik will get you?
Nina considered.
Well, I do like the sound of that.
Inej leaned back on the railing and peered at Nina.
You look radiant.
It won't last.
It never does.
Then Inej's smile faltered.
Are you afraid? Terrified.
We'll all be here with you.
Nina took a wobbly breath and nodded. Inej had made countless alliances in Ketterdam, but few friends. She rested her head against Nina's shoulder.
If I were a Suli seer, she said, I could look into the future and tell you it will be all right.
Or that I'm going to die in agony.
Nina pressed her cheek against the top of Inej's head.
Tell me something good, anyway.
It will be all right, Inej said. You'll survive this, and then you're going to be very, very rich. You'll sing sea shanties and drinking songs nightly in an East Stave cabaret, and you'll bribe everyone to give you standing ovations after every song.
Nina laughed softly.
Let's buy the menagerie.
Inej grinned, thinking of the future and her little ship.
Let's buy it and burn it down.
They watched the waves for a while.
Ready?
Nina said. Inej was glad she hadn't had to ask. She pushed up her sleeve, bearing the peacock feather and mottled skin beneath. It took the barest second. The softest brush of Nina's fingertips. The itch was acute but passed quickly. When the prickling faded, the skin of Inej's forearm was perfect. Almost too smooth and flawless, like it was the one new part of her. Inej touched the soft skin. Just like that, it was done. If only every wound could be banished so easily. Nina kissed Inej's cheek.
I'm going to find Matthias before things get bad.
But as she walked away, Inej saw Nina had another reason to depart. Kaz was standing in the shadows near the mast. He had a heavy coat on and was leaning on his crow's head cane. He looked almost like himself again. Inej's knives would be waiting in the hold with her other belongings. She'd missed her claws. Kaz murmured a few words to Nina, and the Grisha reared back in surprise. Inej couldn't make out the rest of what they said, but she could tell the exchange was tense before Nina made an exasperated sound and vanished below decks. What did you say to Nina? Inej asked when he joined her at the rail.
I have a job I need her to perform.
She's about to go through a terrifying ordeal.
And work still needs to get done.
Pragmatic Kaz, why let empathy get in the way? Maybe Nina would be glad for the distraction. They stood together, gazing out at the waves, silence stretching between them.
We're alive,
he said at last. It seems you pray to the right god.
Or travel with the right people.
Inej shrugged.
Who chooses our paths?
He said nothing and she had to smile. No sharp retort? No laughing at my Sully proverbs? He ran his gloved thumb over the rail.
No.
How will we meet the Merchant Council?
When we're a few miles out, Roddy and I will row to harbor in the longboat. We'll find a runner to get word to Van Eck and make the exchange on Velgluk.
Inej shivered. The island was popular with slavers and smugglers. The council's choice or yours?
Van Eck suggested it.
Inej frowned.
Why does a merchant know about Velgluk?
Trade is trade. Maybe Van Eck isn't quite the upstanding merch he seems.
They were silent for a while. Finally, she said,
I'm going to learn to sail.
Kaz's brow furrowed and he cast her a surprised glance.
Really? Why?
I want to use my money to hire a crew and outfit a ship. Saying the words wrapped her breath up in an anxious spool. Her dream still felt fragile. She didn't want to care what Kaz thought, but she did.
I'm going to hunt slavers.
Purpose, he said thoughtfully.
You know, you can't stop them all.
If I don't try, I won't stop any.
Then I almost pity the slavers, Kaz said. They have no idea what's coming for them.
A pleased flush warmed her cheeks. But hadn't Kaz always believed she was dangerous? Inej balanced her elbows on the railing and rested her chin in her palms. I'll go home first, though.
To Ravka?
She nodded.
To find your family?
Yes. Only 2 days ago she would have left it at that, respecting their unspoken agreement to tread lightly in each other's pasts. Now she said,
Was there no one but your brother, Kaz? Where are your mother and father?
Barrel boys don't have parents. We're born in the harbor and crawl out of the canals.
Inej shook her head. She watched the sea shift and sigh, each wave a breath. She could just make out the horizon, the barest difference between black sky and blacker sea. She thought of her parents. She'd been away from them nearly 3 years. How would they have changed? Could she be their daughter again?
Maybe not right away.
But she wanted to sit with her father on the steps of the wagon, eating fruit from the trees. She wanted to see her mother dust chalk from her hands before she prepared the evening meal. She wanted tall southern grasses and the vast sky above the Sikorzoi Mountains. Something she needed was waiting for her there. What did Kaz need? You're about to be rich, Kaz. What will you do when there's no more blood to shed or vengeance to take?
There's always more.
More money, more mayhem, more scores to settle. Was there never another dream? He said nothing. What had carved all the hope from his heart? She might never know. Inej turned to go. Kaz seized her hand, keeping it on the railing. He didn't look at her.
Stay, he said,
his voice rough stone.
Stay in Ketterdam. Stay with me.
She looked down at his gloved hand clutching hers. Everything in her wanted to say yes, but she would not settle for so little, not after all she'd been through. What would be the point? He took a breath.
I want you to stay. I want you to. I want you.
You want me. She turned the words over. Gently she squeezed his hand. And how will you have me, Kaz? He looked at her then, eyes fierce, mouth set. It was the face he wore when he was fighting. How will you have me? She repeated. Fully clothed? Gloves on? Your head turned away so our lips can never touch? He released her hand, his shoulders bunching, his gaze angry and ashamed as he turned his face to the sea. Maybe it was because his back was to her that she could finally speak the words. I will have you without armor, Kaz Brekker.
Or I will not have you at all.
Speak. She begged silently. Give me a reason to stay. For all his selfishness and cruelty, Kaz was still the boy who had saved her. She wanted to believe he was worth saving too. The sails creaked. The clouds parted for the moon, then gathered back around her. Inej left Kaz with the wind howling and dawn still a long while away.
43. Nina. The ache set in after dawn. An hour later, it felt as if her bones were trying to push through the places where her joints met. She lay on the same table where she'd healed Inej's knife wound. Her senses were still sharp enough that she could smell the coppery scent of the Suli girl's blood beneath the cleaner Roddy had used to remove it from the wood. It smelled like Inej. Matthias sat beside her. He'd tried to take her hand, but the pain was too great. The chafe of his skin on hers made her flesh feel raw. Everything looked wrong. Everything felt wrong. All she could think of was the sweet, burnt taste of the perem. Her throat itched. Her skin felt like an enemy. When the tremors began, she begged him to leave. I don't want you to see me like this, she said, trying to roll on her side. He brushed the damp hair from her brow. How bad is it?
Bad.
But she knew it would get worse. Do you want to try the Jurda? Kuei had suggested that small doses of regular Jurda might help Nina get through the day. She shook her head.
I want... Saints, why is it so hot in here?
Then, despite the pain, she tried to sit up.
Don't give me another dose. Whatever I say, Matthias, no matter how much I beg, I don't want to be like Nestor. Like those Grisha in the cells.
Nina, Kuei said the withdrawal could kill you. I won't let you die.
Kuei. Back at the treasury, Matthias had said, he's one of us. She liked that word. Us. A word without divisions or borders. It seemed full of hope. She flopped back down, and her whole body rebelled. Her clothes were crushed glass.
I would have killed all of the Druskala.
We all carry our sins, Nina. I need you to live, so I can atone for mine.
You can do that without me, you know.
He buried his head in his hands,
I don't want to.
Matthias, she said, running her fingers through the close crop of his hair. It hurt. The world hurt. Touching him hurt. But she still did it. She might not ever get to again. I am not sorry. He took her hand and kissed her knuckles gently. She winced. But when he tried to pull away, she clutched him tighter. Stay, she panted. Tears leaked from her eyes. Stay, till the end.
And after, he said, and always.
I want to feel safe again. I want to go home to Ravka.
Then I'll take you there. We'll set fire to raisins or whatever you heathens do for fun.
Zealot, she said weakly.
Witch?
Barbarian.
Nina,
he whispered.
Little red bird. Don't go.
44. Jesper. As the schooner sped south, it was as if the whole crew was sitting vigil. Everyone spoke in hushed tones, treading quietly over the decks. Jesper was as worried about Nina as anyone, except Matthias, he supposed. But the respectful silence was hard to bear. He needed something to shoot at. The Feraline felt like a ghost ship. Matthias was sequestered with Nina, and he'd asked for Weiland's help in caring for her. Even if Weiland didn't love chemistry, he knew more about tinctures and compounds than anyone in the crew other than Kuwei. And Matthias couldn't understand half of what Kuwei said. Jesper hadn't seen Weiland since they'd fled the Jerholm Harbor, and he had to admit, he missed having the Merchling around to annoy. Kuwei seemed friendly enough, but his courage was rough, and he didn't seem to like to talk much. Sometimes he'd just appear on deck at night and stand silently beside Jesper, staring out at the waves. It was a little unnerving. Only Inez wanted to chat with anyone, and that was because she seemed to have developed a consuming interest in all things nautical. She spent most of her time with Specht and Rotti, learning knots and how to rig sails. Jesper had always known there was a good chance they wouldn't make this journey home at all, that they'd end up in cells in the ice court or skewered on pikes. But he'd figured that if they managed the impossible task of rescuing Yul-Bayur and getting to the Ferrolind, the trip back to Ketterdam would be a party. They'd drink whatever Specht might have squirreled away on the ship, eat the last of Nina's toffees, recount their close calls and every small victory. But he never could have foreseen the way they'd been cornered in the harbor, and he certainly couldn't have imagined what Nina had done to get them out of it. Jesper worried about Nina, but thinking about her made him feel guilty. When they boarded the schooner and Kuwei explained Perrin, a tiny voice inside him said he should offer to take the drug as well. Even though he was a fabricator without training, maybe he could have helped to draw the Perrin out of Nina's system and set her free. But that was a hero's voice, and Jesper had long since stopped thinking he had the makings of a hero. Hell, a hero would have volunteered to take the Perrin when they were facing down the Fjerdins at the harbor. When Kirch finally appeared on the horizon, Jesper felt a strange mixture of relief and trepidation. Their lives were about to change in ways that still didn't seem real. They dropped anchor, and when nightfall came, Jesper asked Kaz if he could join him and Roddy in the longboat they were rowing to Fifth Harbor. They didn't need him along, but Jesper was desperate for distraction. The chaos of Ketterdam was unchanged, ships unloading their cargo at the docks, tourists and soldiers on leave, pouring out of boats, laughing and shouting to each other on their way to the barrel. "Looks the same as when we left it," Jesper said. Kaz raised a brow. He was back in his sleek gray and black suit, immaculate tie. "What did you expect?"
I don't know exactly, Jesper admitted. But he felt different. Even with the familiar weight of his pearl-handled revolvers at his hips and a rifle on his back. He kept thinking of the Tidemaker woman, screaming in the Druskala courtyard, her face speckled black. He looked down at his hands. Did he want to be a fabricator? To live as one? He couldn't help what he was, but did he want to cultivate his power, or keep hiding it? Kaz left Roddy and Jesper at the dock while he went to find a runner to take a message to Van Eck. Jesper wanted to go with him, but Kaz told him to stay put. Annoyed, Jesper took the chance to stretch his legs, aware of Roddy observing him. He had the distinct sense that Kaz had told Roddy to keep him under watch. Did Kaz think he was going to bolt straight to the nearest gambling hall? He looked up at the cloudy sky. Why not admit it? He was tempted. He was itching for a hand of cards. Maybe he really should get out of Ketterdom. Once he had his money and his debts were paid, he could go anywhere in the world, even Ravka. Hopefully, Nina would recover, and when she was back to herself, Jesper could sit down with her and figure it out. No commitments right away, but he could at least visit. Couldn't he? A half hour later, Kaz returned with a message confirming that representatives from the Merchant Council would meet them on Velgiluk at dawn the following day. Look at that, Kaz said, holding the paper out for Jesper to read. Beneath the details of the meet, it said, Congratulations. Your country thanks you. The words left a funny feeling in Jesper's chest, but he laughed and said, As long as my country pays cash. Does the council know the scientist is dead? I put it all in my note to Van Eck, Kaz said. I told him Boyul Bayur is dead, but that his son is alive and was working on Jerda Perim for the Fjerdins. Did he haggle? Not in the note. He expressed his deep concern, but didn't mention anything about price. We did our job. We'll see if he tries to bargain us down when we get to Velgiluk. As they rode back to the Ferrolind, Jesper asked, Will Wyland come with us to meet Van Eck? No, Kaz said, fingers drumming on the crow's head of his cane. Matthias will be with us, and someone has to stay with Nina. Besides, if we need to use Wyland to twist his father's arm, it's better that we not show our hand too early. It made sense. And whatever discord existed between Wyland and his father, Jesper doubted Wyland wanted to hash it out in front of the dregs and Matthias. He spent a restless night tossing in his hammock and woke to a muggy, gray dawn. There was no wind, and the sea looked flat and glassy as a mill pond. A stubborn sky, murmured Inej, squinting out towards Velgiluk. She was right. There were no clouds on the horizon, but the air felt dense with moisture, as if a storm was simply refusing to form. Jesper scanned the empty deck. He assumed Wyland would come up to see them off, but Nina couldn't be left on her own. How is she? He asked Matthias. Weak, said the Fjerdin. She's been unable to sleep, but we got her to take some broth, and she seems to be keeping it down. Jesper knew he was being selfish and stupid, but some petty part of him wondered if Wyland had deliberately kept away from him on the journey back. Maybe now that the job was complete and he was on his way to his share of the haul, Wyland was done slumming it with criminals. Where's the other longboat? Jesper asked as he, Kaz, Matthias, Inej, and Kuwe rowed out from the Ferrolind with Roddy. Repairs, said Kaz. Velgiluk was so flat, it was barely visible once they were rowing through the water. The island was less than a mile wide, a barren patch of sand and rock distinguished only by the wrecked foundation of an old tower used by the Council of Tides. Smugglers called it Velgiluk. Good luck. Because of the paintings still visible around the base of what would have been the obelisk tower. Golden circles meant to represent coins. Symbols of favor from Gizan, the god of industry and commerce. Jesper and Kaz had come to the island before to meet with smugglers. It was far from Ketterdam's ports, well outside the patrol of the harbor watch, with no buildings or hidden coves from which to stage an ambush, an ideal meeting place for wary parties. A brigantine was moored off the island's opposite shore, its sails hanging limp and useless. Jesper had watched it make slow progress from Ketterdam in the early dawn light, a tiny black dot that grew into a hulking blot on the horizon. He could hear the sailors calling to each other as they worked the oars. Now, its crew lowered a longboat packed with men over the side. When their own longboat made shore, Jesper and the others leapt out to pull it onto the sand. Jesper checked his revolvers and saw Inej touch her fingers briefly to each of her knives, lips moving. Matthias adjusted the rifle strapped to his back and rolled his enormous shoulders. Kuwe watched it all in silence. "All right," Kaz said. "Let's go get rich." "No mourners," Roddy said, settling down to wait with the longboat. "No funerals," they replied. They strode toward the center of the island, Kuwe behind Kaz, bracketed by Jesper and Inej. As they drew closer, Jesper saw someone in a black mercher's suit approaching, accompanied by a tall, shoe man, dark hair bound at the nape of his neck, and followed by a contingent of the Stod Watch in purple coats, all carrying batons and repeating rifles. Two men lugged a heavy trunk between them, staggering slightly with its weight.
"So that's what 30 million Kruger looks like," said Kaz. Jesper gave a low whistle. "Hopefully the longboat won't sink." "Just you, Van Eck?" Kaz asked the man in merch black. The rest of the council couldn't be bothered. So this was Jan Van Eck. He was leaner than Wylan, and his hairline was higher. But Jesper could definitely see the resemblance. "The council felt I was best suited to this task, as we've had dealings before." "Nice pin," Kaz said, with a glance at the ruby stuck to Van Eck's tie. "Not as nice as the other one, though." Van Eck's lips pursed slightly. "The other was an heirloom." "Well?" he said to the shoe man beside him. The shoe said, "That's Kuwe Yubo. It's a year since I've seen him. He's quite a bit taller now, but he's the spitting image of his father." He said something to Kuwe and Shu, and gave a short bow. Kuwe glanced at Kaz, then bowed in return. Jesper could see a sheen of sweat on his brow. Van Eck smiled. "I will confess I am surprised, Mr. Brecker. Surprised, but delighted." "You didn't think we'd succeed?" "Let's say I thought you were a long shot." "Is that why you hedged your bets?" "Ah, so you've spoken to Pekka Rollins."
"He's quite a talker when you get him in the right frame of mind," said Kaz. And Jesper remembered the blood on Kaz's shirt at the prison. "He said you contracted him and the Dime Lions to go after Yul-Bayur for the Merchant Council as well." With a niggle of unease, Jesper wondered what else Rollins might have told Kaz. Van Eck shrugged. "It was best to be safe." "And why should you care if a bunch of canal rats blow each other to bits in pursuit of a prize?" "We knew the odds of either team succeeding were small. As a gambler, I hope you can understand." But Jesper had never thought of Kaz as a gambler. Gamblers left something to chance. 30 million Kruger will soothe my hurt feelings," said Kaz. Van Eck gestured to the guards behind him. They hefted the trunk and set it down in front of Kaz. He crouched beside it and opened the lid. Even from a distance, Jesper could see the stacks of bills in palest, kerch purple, emblazoned with the three flying fish, row after row of them, bound in paper bands, sealed with wax. Inej drew in a breath. "Even your money is a peculiar color," said Matthias. Jesper wanted to run his hands over those glorious stacks. He wanted to take a bath in them. I think my mouth just watered. Kaz pulled out one of the stacks and let his gloved thumb skim over it, then dug down another layer to make sure Van Eck hadn't tried to bunk them. It's all here, he said. He looked over his shoulder and waved Kuwe forward. The boy crossed the short distance, and Van Eck gestured him over to his side, giving him a pat on the back. Kaz rose. Well, Van Eck, I'd like to say it's been a pleasure, but I'm not that good a liar. We'll take our leave. Van Eck stepped in front of Kuwe and said, I'm afraid I can't allow that, Mr. Brecker. Kaz leaned on his cane, watching Van Eck keenly. Is there a problem? I count several right in front of me, and there's no way any of you are getting off this island. Van Eck pulled a whistle from his pocket and blew a high, shrill note. In the same moment, his servants drew their weapons, and a wind came out of nowhere. A howling, unnatural gale that whirled around the little island as the sea began to rise. The sailors by the brigantine's longboat lifted their arms, waves gathering behind them. Tide makers, growled Matthias, reaching for his rifle. Then, two more figures launched themselves from the deck of the brigantine. Squallers, Jesper shouted. They're using Perim. The squallers circled in the sky, wind whipping the air around them. You kept part of the stash Yulbayur sent to the council, said Kaz, dark eyes narrowed. The squallers lifted their arms, and the wind wailed a high, keening cry. Jesper reached for his revolvers. Hadn't he wanted something to shoot at? I guess this place is good luck, he thought with a rush of anticipation. Looks like I'm about to get my wish.
45. Kaz. The deal is the deal, Van Eck, Kaz said over the sounds of the growing storm. If the Merchant Council fails to honor its end of this bargain, no one from the Barrow will ever traffic with any of you again. Your word will be meaningless. That would be a problem, Mr. Brecker, if the Council knew anything about this deal. Understanding came in a terrible flash. They were never involved, Kaz said. Why had he believed Van Eck had the blessing of the Merchant Council? Because he was a rich, upstanding mercher? Because he dressed his own servants and soldiers in the purple uniforms of the Stadtwatch? Kaz had met with Van Eck in a quarantined mercher's house, not a government building, but he'd been taken in by a little set dressing. It was Hurtzun and his coffee house all over again. Only now Kaz was old enough to know better. You wanted Yulbayur. You wanted the formula for Perim. Van Eck conceded the truth with an easy nod. Neutrality is a luxury Kirch has too long enjoyed. The members of the council think that their wealth protects them, that they can sit back and count their money while the world squabbles. And you know better? Indeed, I do. Jorda Parem is not a secret that can be kept or quashed or stashed in a cabin on the Zemeni frontier. So, all your talk of trade lines and markets collapsing? Oh, it will all happen just as I predicted, Mr. Brecker. I'm counting on it. As soon as the council received Bo Yulbayur's message, I began buying up Judah fields in Novia Zem. When Perim is unleashed on the world, every country, every government will be clamoring for a ready supply of it to use on their Grisha. Chaos, said Matthias. Yes, said Van Eck. Chaos will come, and I will be its master. Its very wealthy master. He will be ensuring slavery and death for Grisha everywhere, Inej said. Van Eck raised a brow. How old are you, girl? 16, 17? Nations rise and fall. Markets are made and unmade. When power shifts,
Someone always suffers.
When profit shifts, Jesper shot back. Van Eck's expression was bemused.
Aren't they one and the same?
When the council finds out, Inej began, the council will never hear of this, Van Eck said. Why do you think I chose scum from the barrel as my champions? Oh, you are resourceful and far more clever than any mercenaries, I give you that. But more important, you will not be missed.
Van Eck lifted his hand. The Tide Makers spun their arms. Kaz heard a yell and turned to see a coil of water looming over Rahi.
It slammed down on the longboard, smashing it to bits as he dove for cover. None of you will leave this island, Mr. Brecker. All of you will vanish, and nobody will care.
He raised his hand again, and the Tide Makers responded. A massive wave roared toward the Ferryland.
No, cried Jesper. Van Eck, shouted Kaz. Your son is on that ship.
Van Eck's gaze snapped to Kaz. He blew his whistle. The Tide Makers froze, awaiting instruction. Reluctantly, Van Eck dropped his hand. They let the wave fall harmlessly. The displaced sea sloshing against the side of the Ferryland.
My son, Van Eck said. Wylan, Van Eck.
Mr. Brecker, surely you must know that I sent my son packing months ago.
I know you've written to Wylan every week since he left your household, begging him to return. Those are not the actions of a man who doesn't care for his only son and heir.
Van Eck began to laugh. A warm, almost jovial chuckle, but its edges were jagged and bitter.
Let me tell you about my son. He spat the word out as if it were poison on his lips. He was meant to be heir to one of the greatest fortunes in all of Kerch, an empire with shipping lines that reach all over the globe, one built by my father and my father's father. But my son, the boy meant to rule this grand empire, cannot do what a child of 7 years can. He can solve an equation, he can paint and play the flute most prettily. What my son cannot do, Mr. Brecker, is read. He cannot write. I've hired the best tutors from every corner of the world. I've tried specialists, tonics, beatings, hypnotism, but he refused to be taught. I finally had to accept that Gazan saw fit to curse me with a moron for a child. Wylan is a boy who will never grow to be a man. He is a disgrace to my house.
The letters, said Jesper, and Kaz could see the anger in his face.
You weren't pleading with him to come back. You were mocking him.
Jesper was right. If you're reading this, then you know how much I wish to have you home. Every letter had been a slap in the face to Wylan, a kind of cruel joke.
He's your son, Jesper said.
No, he is a mistake, one soon to be corrected. My lovely young wife is carrying a child, and be it boy or girl or creature with horns, that child will be my heir. Not some soft-pated idiot who cannot read a hymnal, let alone a ledger. Not some fool who would make the Van Eck name a laughingstock.
You're the fool, Jesper snarled. He's smarter than most of us put together, and he deserves a better father than you.
Deserved, amended Van Eck. He blew the whistle twice. The Tide Makers didn't hesitate. Before anyone could draw breath to protest, two huge walls of water rose and shot toward the Ferryland. They crushed the ship between them with a resonant boom, sending debris flying. Jesper screamed in rage and raised his guns.
Jesper, Kaz commanded, stand down.
He killed them, Jesper said, face contorted.
He killed Wylan and Nina.
Matthias laid a hand on his arm.
Jesper, he said calmly, be still.
Jesper looked back at the rocking waves, at the broken bits of mast and torn sail, where his ship had been only seconds before.
I don't understand.
I confess to being a bit shocked too, Mr. Brecker,
said Van Eck. No tears? No righteous protests for your lost crew? They raise you cold in the barrel. Cold and cautious, said Kaz. Not cautious enough, it seems. At least you won't live to regret your mistakes. Tell me, Van Eck, will you do penance? Gazin frowns on broken contracts. Van Eck's nostrils flared. What have you given to the world, Mr. Brecker? Have you created wealth? Prosperity? No. You take from honest men and women and serve only yourself. Gazin shows his favor to those who are deserving, to those who build cities, not to the rats who eat away at their foundations. He has blessed me and my dealings. You will perish, and I will prosper. That is Gazin's will. There's just one problem, Van Eck. You'll need Kuei Yulbo to do it. And how will you take him from me? You are outgunned and surrounded. I don't need to take him from you. You never had him. That's not Kuei Yulbo. A sorry bluff at best. I'm not big on bluffing, am I, Inej? Not as a rule. Van Eck's lip curled. And why is that? Because he'd rather cheat, said the boei who was not Kuei Yulbo in perfect, unaccented Kurch. Van Eck startled at the sound of his voice and Jesper flinched. The shoe boei held out a hand. Pay up, Kaz. Kaz sighed. I do hate to lose a wager. You see, Van Eck, Weilen bet me that you would have no qualms about ending his life. Call me sentimental, but I didn't believe a father could be so callous. Van Eck stared at Kuei Yulbo, or the boei he'd believed to be Kuei Yulbo. Kaz watched him wrestle with the reality of Weiland's voice coming from Kuei's mouth. Jesper looked just as incredulous. He'd get his explanation after Kaz got his money. It's not possible, said Van Eck. It shouldn't have been. Nina had been a passable tailor at best, but under the influence of Jurda Parem, well, as Van Eck had once said, things become possible that simply shouldn't be. A nearly perfect replica of Kuei Yulbo stood before them. But he had Weiland's voice, his mannerisms, and, though Kaz could see the fear and hurt in his golden eyes, Weiland's surprising courage, too. After the battle in the Jerholm Harbor, the Merchling had come to Kaz to warn him that he couldn't be used as leverage against his father. Weiland had been red-faced, barely able to speak the words of his supposed affliction. Kaz had only shrugged. Some men were poets, some were farmers, some were merchers. Weiland could draw a perfect elevation. He'd made a drill that could cut through Grisha glass from parts of a gate and scavenged bits of jewelry. So what if he couldn't read? Kaz had expected the boei to balk at the idea of being tailored to look like Kuei. A transformation that extreme was beyond the power of any Grisha not using Parem. It may be permanent, Kaz had warned him. Weiland hadn't cared. I need to know. Once and for all, I need to know what my father really thinks of me. And now he did. Van Eck goggled at Weiland, searching for some sign of his son's features. It can't be. Weiland walked to Kaz's side. Maybe you can pray to Gazin for understanding, father. Weiland was a bit taller than Kuei, his face a bit rounder, but Kaz had seen them side by side, and the likeness was extraordinary. Nina's work performed on the ship before that first extraordinary high had begun to wane was nearly flawless. Fury lashed across Van Eck's features. Worthless, he hissed at Weiland. I knew you were a fool, but a traitor as well? A fool would have been waiting to be smashed to bits on that ship, and as for traitor, you've called me worse in the last few minutes alone. Just think, Kaz said to Van Eck, What if the real Kuei Yulbo had been on the ship you just turned into toothpicks? Fanak's voice was calm, but an angry flush had crept up his neck. Where is Kuei Yulbo? Let us safely off this island without payment, and I'll gladly tell you. You have no way out of this, Bracker. Your little crew is no match for my Grisha. Kaz shrugged. Kill us, and you'll never find Kuei. Vanek appeared to consider this. Then he stepped back. Guards to me, he shouted. Kill everyone but Bracker. Kaz knew the instant he made the mistake. They'd all known it might come to this. He should have trusted his crew. His eyes should have stayed trained on Vanek. Instead, in that moment of threat, when he should have thought only of the fight, he looked at Inej. And Vanek saw it. He blew on his whistle. Leave the others. Get the money and the girl. Hold your ground, Kaz's instinct said. Vanek has the money. He is the key. Inej can fend for herself. She's a pawn. Not the prize. But he was already turning, already sprinting to get to her as the Grisha attacked. The Tidemakers reached her first, vanishing into mist, then reappearing at her side. But only a fool would try to take Inej in close combat. The Tidemakers were fast, vanishing and reappearing, grabbing at her. But she was the Wraith, and her knives found heart, throat, spleen. Blood spilled over the sand as the Tidemakers collapsed in two very solid heaps. Kaz caught movement from the corner of his eye. A squalor hurtling toward Inej. Jesper! He shouted. Jesper fired, and the squalor plummeted to the earth. The next squalor was smarter. He came in low, gliding over the ruins. Jesper and Matthias opened fire, but they had to face the sun to shoot, and not even Jesper could aim blind. The squalor barreled into Inej and sped upward with her into the sky. Stay still. Kaz urged her silently, his pistol drawn, but she didn't. Her body spun, and she slashed out. The squalor's scream was distant. He released her. Inej fell, plunging toward the sand. Kaz ran toward her without logic or plan. A blur cut through his vision. A third squalor swooped down, snatching her up seconds before impact and dealing her a vicious blow to the skull. Kaz saw Inej's body go limp. Bring you down, roared Matthias. No, shouted Kaz. Shoot him and she falls too. The Grisha dodged up and out of range. Inej clutched in his arms. There was nothing they could do but stand there like fools and watch her shape get smaller in the sky. A distant moon, a fading star, then gone. Van Eck's guards and Grisha closed in, sweeping the Murcher and the trunk of Kruga through the air. Onto the waiting brigantine. Vengeance for Geordi. All Kaz had worked for was slipping away. He didn't care. You have 1 week to bring me the real Kuei, Van Eck shouted. Or they'll hear that girl's screams all the way back in Fjorda. And if that still doesn't move you, I'll let it be known that you're harboring the most valuable hostage in the world. Every gang, government, smuggler, and spy will be after you and the dregs. You'll have nowhere to hide. Kaz, I can make the shot, said Jesper, holstering his revolvers and grabbing for his rifle. Vanek is still in range. And all would be lost. Inej, the money, everything. No, Kaz said. Let them go. The sea was flat. No breeze blew. But Vanek's remaining squalors filled the ship's sails with a driving wind. Kaz watched the brigantine surge across the water toward Ketterdam, to safety. To a fortress built on Vanek's impeccable Murcher reputation. He felt as he had, looking into the darkened windows of the house on Zelverstrat, helpless once more. He prayed to the wrong god. Slowly, Jesper lowered his rifle. Vanek will send soldiers and Grisha to search for Kuei, said Matthias. He won't find him, or Nina. Not in the slat or any other part of the barrel. Nowhere in Ketterdam. The previous night, Kaz had ordered Specht to take Kuei and Nina from Feralind in the second longboat. The one he'd told Jasper was